Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. Though you may not realize that the ongoing threat of terrorism is affecting your life and that of your loved ones. Each week, Dr. Carol analyzes the hottest topics in terror and helps you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror.
The reports of ISIS's death have been greatly exaggerated. Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, a psychiatrist and your terrorist therapist. Do you recognize that saying? The actual quote came from Mark Twain in 1897 when he was in London. No, he wasn't talking about ISIS. He was talking about himself. There was a misinformation that was reported in the press about the fact that he had died, that Mark Twain had died, and it was actually a cousin of his who had the same real last name, Clemens. Mark Twain is a pen name for Samuel Clemens. So what he said was, the reports of my death have been greatly exaggerated because they reported that he was dead when it was his cousin's death, and he had to correct everyone by showing that he was alive. So getting back to terrorism, the reports of ISIS's death have been greatly exaggerated. And by that, I mean, you probably think, as we have pretty much been led to believe by the mainstream media, that, well, it depends, actually. It depends on which media or which medium. But, you know, we're kind of being led to believe to a large extent that ISIS, because the U.S. and the people who are working in the coalition, the other countries, we have greatly reduced the area in Iraq and Syria that ISIS had set upon, had captured as their caliphate. So that leads us to, that's true. That's absolutely true. But that has led us, because we all want to believe the terrorism is dead, right? That has led us to assume that because we have closed in on ISIS's caliphate in the Middle East, that means terrorism and ISIS propagated terrorism is dead or dying around the world. And, you know, besides in Iraq and Syria, also around the world, and nothing could be farther from the truth. So there is a current report that just came out that's by the Institute for the Study of War. They warned this week that ISIS is reviving itself, and they are have become a capable insurgency. In other words, they have been working towards a second resurgence, and that is very well possible, capable. They're capable of making that happen. So, you know, we have made a lot of progress, but in other words, they have regained sufficient strength that they can mount a renewed insurgency to overcome the local security forces in Iraq and Syria. You know, the point, of course, of the U.S. and the U.S.-led coalition and the local forces, the point has been to minimize ISIS such that just the local forces can control them, and the U.S. and the U.S.-led coalition can pull out. Well, not so fast. apparently, ISIS still holds support zones, small pockets of territory, particularly along the border that separates Iraq and Syria, and they are fighting back, basically. They are becoming stronger. And another intelligence community, the U.S. intelligence community, made their annual worldwide threat assessment, and they said, over the next year, we expect that ISIS is likely to focus on regrouping in Iraq and Syria, and in fact, that is what has been happening. So The Institute for the Study of War has said that ICE, that the U.S. and the anti-ISIS campaign hasn't eliminated the global threat posed by ISIS, despite having minimized their land holdings. And in August, just this past month, or a little over a month ago, the Pentagon acknowledged that ISIS still counts with the support of nearly 30,000 fighters. So even though we minimize their territory, just in Iraq and Syria, they still have 30,000 fighters. And they're more capable than Al-Qaeda. And this is not counting the fighters that ISIS has sent all over the world. So they are regrouping, rearming, planning for a future large-scale insurgency in Iraq and Syria, and continuing to provoke lone wolves to carry out attacks all over the world. So the Center for Strategic and International Studies said that there are more ISIS-linked foreign fighters in Southeast Asia, mainly the Philippines, than there ever were during the peak of the U.S.-led wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. And in particular, the southern Philippines, which is an ungoverned region, they are flowing into there. They're also going into Africa and Bangladesh and Southeast Asia, as I said, and also in Europe. And I'm going to be talking to you a little bit about incredibly shocking statistics in terms of what's happening in Europe. It becomes a greater and greater problem each and every day. Now, the U.S. Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis recently said that ISIS is not defeated, and the U.S. will have to stay in Iraq and Syria until the local security is capable of preventing them from making a comeback. And this is kind of interesting. He said, quote, ISIS has collapsed inward. In their own way, they have reinforced a center as they've been forced into what is now less than 2% of their original territory that they held. So we've crammed them into less than 2% of what they used to be in. But ironically, that has made them stronger because they are, crowded into a smaller area. And so they are able to build upon themselves to become stronger. Mattis said, quote, so it's going to still be a tough fight. I don't want anyone to be under any illusions, and we're together in that fight, and we will be successful, but it's still going to take some time. Well, one of the places now that we need to be more concerned about, because of ISIS becoming stronger, and again, not just stronger in Iraq and Syria, but stronger in terms of perpetrating their radical Islamic philosophy and spurring on lone wolves to create terror attacks all over the world. And that brings us to new statistics about our borders, our southwest borders in particular. And there was a recent interview with the Border Patrol's Rio Grande Valley Sector Chief in Texas. His name is Agent Manuel Padilla Jr. And he has just done a rather scary interview, but truthful interview that, again, just like the death of ISIS has been greatly exaggerated, I don't know that we could say the death of what's happening at the border, but certainly the mischaracterization of what's happening at the border. You've been hearing all about the border wall and all the struggles that President Trump is having to get money for the border wall. And part of the reason why he's having struggles is because people, politicians in particular, or political activists, are mischaracterizing what that's all about. They're mischaracterizing it to make it seem like it's about keeping Mexicans out and how horrible that is and how prejudiced that is and why should we do that? And, you know, but it's not. That is not the primary reason. I mean, yes, there has to be more controlled immigration, not just Mexicans, but everybody. I mean, you know, we can't just have open borders altogether in from Canada or Mexico. But that is not the main problem. The main problem is that there are terrorists amongst all of these thousands of people that are coming across the border in basically an uncontrolled manner because there are too many of them for the border patrols. We've been wanting to believe and we've been getting information that's been leading us to believe that in fact we are winning the war on terror. I mean, we certainly have made big advances, absolutely, and that is certainly not to be underestimated, and we owe a great debt of gratitude to our troops, to all the people involved in the defense of this country, and to what they have done in Iraq and Syria in terms of shrinking ISIS to 2% of what it used to be. But as I was talking in the first segment, that ironically has helped them to become stronger, and they're planning a second resurgence. Now, one of the problems, besides, you know, what is happening in Iraq and Syria, is that it is also making them stronger in terms of being able to influence lone wolves all around the world. And one of the ways that they are doing this, I guess maybe the way that people, that Americans are or should be most concerned, is through the open border in the South, and the Southwest in particular. So, as I was saying, the Rio Grande Valley Sector Chief Patrol Agent, Manuel Padilla Jr., gave this interview about how the open borders are a, quote, are absolutely, quote unquote, absolutely a risk of terrorism. So he's talked about how not only because of the openness of the border in these areas, but also because of the transnational criminal groups south of the border. So these groups are collecting money for people to get across. They're amongst the coyotes, you know, the people who help people get across. And because there are these criminal groups, transnational, in other words, not just from Mexico, but, you know, from all over, they are making money, lots of money, from allowing in or getting people to pay them to cross the border. And so that is the fact that they can facilitate this means that more people are crossing. Now, this patrol agent Padilla said that the border security started becoming more of a organized, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, when they noticed in San Diego that there were over 560,000 people crossing per year. So they kind of woke up and realized we have to do something about this. Now, again, early 90s, that's before 9/11. So, okay, they have four main areas, California, you know, areas that they've divided into four areas that they patrol, California, Arizona, West Texas, and New Mexico, and South Texas. And there have been, in 2014, just to give you an idea, this is when the increase started in family and unaccompanied minors. There were 51,000 family units that came across, and 51,000 unaccompanied children. So, you know, these numbers are staggering. And so the Border Patrol Agent Padilla said, quote, "There is no way that we can accept the risk of people coming into this country without us knowing who they are. I can tell you that year to date, we have apprehended people from 52 different countries. Some of those are Middle Eastern countries. Some of those are countries from Africa. So it's really people from all over the world, and we must know how they're arriving here, who they are, and ensure that the national security mission is done. Now, again, we're not saying that all people coming from the Middle East or all people who are Muslim or all people coming from Africa are terrorists, but certainly, you know, countries who are more terrorist-oriented, there is more of a risk. I mean, it's just statistics. There's more of a risk of a higher percentage of people coming from those countries as being a risk, a terrorist risk. Now, there was a report from the United Nations, a report on drugs and crime in Central America and the Caribbean in 2012, and they said that there were pathways from the Horn of Africa, which would be Somalia, into the United States, and they take a lot of the same routes once they get to South America or Central America that Mexican or Central American migrants take. Now, this is an interesting little twist. Going back to Chief Patrol Agent Padilla, he said that in April, this past April, the agents under his command arrested a group of 9 Bangladeshi nationals. And as of that time, the agents arrested a total of at least 76 Bangladeshis during the 2018 fiscal year. So in other words, in April, there were 9 and a total of at least 76 during 2018. And then in the Laredo sector, they arrested 668 Bangladeshi nationals during this record-setting year. So altogether, it was nearly 750 Bangladeshi migrants that have been crossing the border illegally with the help of Mexican drug cartels. And again, it's not just Mexican drug cartels. Nearly all of the Bangladeshi nationals arrested this year are young men between the ages of 18 and 35. And they have been paying, each one has been paying the cartels up to $27,000 for passage to the U.S. Now, where are these Bangladeshians, Bangladeshi nationals, getting $27,000 each? Well, a clue is that Bangladesh is a hotbed of terrorist activity. So clearly they are getting this money from terrorists, from terrorist organizations that are trying to get terrorists into the U.S. I mean, surely they, all of these people, 750 of them, did not earn, you know, enough money on their own to pay $27,000 each to come to the U.S. Then there was a report from a 2015 report from the U.S. Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs that it acknowledged that there should be legitimate concerns that terrorists could exploit our country's southwest border to enter the U.S. undetected. Now, that's 2015. Obviously, this has been getting worse. Now, they wrote, while the likelihood of a terrorist group using the southwest border as an entry point to complete a terrorist attack is an area of debate, the potential for exploitation should be taken seriously, given that there was a 70% increase from 2013 to 2014 in OTMs, which is other than Mexicans, crossing the border. This included individuals from Iraq, Syria, and Egypt. And 51% of all Border Patrol apprehensions, 51% of the people that they catch at the border are currently OTMs, other than Mexicans. Now, you would not get that impression just listening to the news, you know, who try to make Trump seem crazy for wanting this wall because they are making it a, you know, making it a prejudice, trying to make it all about Mexicans when it is more about people from other countries, and particularly countries where there is a high risk or hotbeds of terrorism, as we've just heard, and where there is a high risk of people hiding within these numbers. I mean, that's kind of the point. When there are so many people, thousands of people crossing the border, it is so easy for people from countries, terrorist countries, let's call them, to get lost amongst these thousands. So that's what this is really all about. Well, here's one. When you think about Belgium, I don't know if you know, but Belgium, well, first of all, you may know from my having talked about this in previous podcasts that I went to medical school in Belgium, the Université de Louvain, the French section of the medical school in Louvain, Belgium. Belgium is made up of about half and half French descended people and the other approximately half from Dutch or Flemish people. So there are two languages in the country, and you know they've had fights with each other about that and so on. But what would you think are the most common, so it's French or Flemish. So what would you think are the most common names, most popular names for newborn boys in Belgium? You think maybe Pierre, Albert, Vincent, I guess, you know, the Flemish equivalent of those names. Well, if you would have guessed those, you would be wrong. The most popular name for newborn boys in Belgium in 2017 is, drumroll please, Mohammed. Mohammed. Now, we know that Molenbeek, in particular, is a hotbed of terrorist activity. The terrorists who perpetrated the Paris attack in 2015 came from Molenbeek. It's a fairly well-populated city. It's a kind of an industrial part of Belgium. And so I guess there are lots of kids there. I didn't look up how many people are born in Molenbeek. But actually, if you look at just the name Mohammed, spelt M-O-H-A-M-E-D, then it would come in 10th place. And the name Liam was the most popular name for baby, would have seemed as the most popular name for baby boys in Belgium in 2017. There were 570 newborns who got the name Liam, which is kind of interesting also, because that's not really a typical French or Flemish name. I guess maybe that reflects the influence of American culture, or I don't know, the celebrities named Liam. But in any case, so Mohammed, spelt M-O-H-A-M-E-D, comes in 10th place with 392 babies being given that name. However, when you change the spelling, when you include all the slight spelling variations of the same Arabic name, Mohammed, then it comes out that there is a much higher number, and it comes out that they are the majority, the most popular baby boy name in 2017. So for example, that would include Mohammed, spelt M-O-H-A-M-M-E-D, 143 boys, Muhammad, M-U-H-A-M-M-E-D, 72 boys, Muhammad, M-U-H-A-M-M-A-D, 53 boys, Mohammed, M-O-H-A-M-M-A-D, 42 boys, and Mohammed, M-O-H-A-M-A-D, 16 boys. Altogether, it adds up to 718. And this doesn't include other variations such as Mohammed Ali, and Mehmet, M-E-H-M-E-T, that would make the number even higher. Now, in Brussels, the capital of Belgium, Mohammed, M-O-H-A-M-E-D, alone is the second most popular boy's name, and combined with all of the other variations, it makes it by far the most popular name in the Belgian capital. Names originating from the Islamic world made up as many as 44%. So in other words, not just Mohammed or Mohammed variations, but names originating from the Islamic world made up as many as 44% of male newborns in Brussels. 44% in Brussels. I'm telling you, folks, I'm not lying. This is, there are statistics to support what I'm saying here. I mean, the question you should be asking yourself is, how long before Mohammed is the most popular name in the U.S., especially if we don't secure the borders? See, it all goes together. In the Belgian region known as Flanders, which is primarily the Flemish area, there are 18% of boys with Islamic names. And Wallonia, which is primarily the French section, there were 13%. And Belgium overall stood at 20%. So 20% of boys, in all of Belgium, 20% of boys have Islamic names. I mean, these numbers are rather staggering. Also, it's not just Belgium. We know that migrants are taking over Europe. So in England and Wales, Muhammad and the various spellings of the name was also the most popular name for newborn boys in 2017 for the sixth straight year. So England and Wales, you think Belgium has problems. England and Wales this has been a staggering statistic, the most popular name for newborn boys for the sixth straight year. And yet, there's so much political correctness in England that you would never know this. You would think that there was no problem with terrorism in England, regardless of how many terror attacks we've heard of in London in the last several years. Then Austria, let's look at Austria. The name Muhammad and its variations are also becoming more popular. Muhammad, M-U-H-A-M-M-E-D, is the third most popular baby name in Austria. Third most popular. I mean, you know, these putting even terrorism aside, just the idea that these countries, these European countries, are losing their culture. You know, and it's not just. I want to be so careful. It's not all Muslims are terrorists. All terrorists aren't Muslims. And it's not even about that, or it's partly about that, of course. But, I mean, it's partly about that there is more of a risk, just as I was saying earlier, people coming from terrorist countries, there's more of a risk that they are going to perpetrate terrorist attacks. I mean, this really isn't brain surgery. But aside from that, even if it was, I don't know, Chinese names, yes, one of the most popular name was popular Chinese name would be. The point is that Europe is losing its culture, that each country in Europe is losing its culture. Whatever the influx of the primary culture is into these European countries, and it is Muslim, or it is Arab, I should say, people migrating from these Middle East countries. What I'm trying to say is it wouldn't matter if it was China or Japan, other than the fact that they are less likely to be terrorists. But the letting in migrants from whatever countries is overshadowing, overcoming the cultures, taking over, really, overtaking the culture of these other countries. I mean, when I lived in Belgium and then I lived in Paris for 3 years, I lived in Belgium. Well, you know, I went to medical school for 5.5 years there, and I lived in Paris for 3 years, and I lived in London after that. During my psychiatry residency, I lived in London for months. You know, it wasn't like that then. It was wonderful. Each of these places had their own distinct cultures. And then also in Paris, you know, Mohammed is now the most popular name for baby boys in Paris's migrant populated suburbs. Also in Paris. So it's all over Europe we're talking about. All over Europe. And why Europeans are not more upset about their cultures being overtaken by migrants, whatever countries these migrants are from, is just shocking to me and very, very upsetting. You know, they are losing their cultures, and it's almost getting to be too late. I don't like to think that anything is too late, but it's almost getting to be too late. I mean, it is too late. I just don't want to be that pessimistic, but certainly if things don't change ASAP, it is going to be too late to reclaim their individual cultures. Well, thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist. If you would like to find out more about terrorism from me, your terrorist therapist, visit my website, terroristtherapist.com. And if you're a parent or teacher and want to build stronger nests for your kids to become more resilient, check out my new award-winning book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. It's the first and only book about terrorism for kids. You can find it wherever books are sold or directly from the publisher at terrorismforkids.com. Terrorism4kids.com. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. We hope listening to the show has made you feel calmer, more resilient, and more able to reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. You can also check out past shows on Renegade Talk Archives for more insights.